No, 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 no! Let's try something else. Hit it, Joe.
Three idiots sharing memories with fans who watched the show. It's the best of both our worlds.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Best of Both Our Worlds, the official, unofficial Hannah Montana podcast, the show where three idiots share our memories of Hannah Montana with the fans so they get a chance to see the other side of the best damn Disney show ever. I love the intro for the show. I am one of the hosts. I'm Jason Earls. I play Jackson Rod Stewart on the show.
I'm Shannon Flynn. I was a director and acting coach on the show.
Hi, I'm Douglas Danger Liebline. I was one of the writers and co-executive producer of Hannah Montana.
Before we jump into today's little Babau Sweet Niblet, we want to thank everyone so much for the support. Your likes, your comments, everything that you've said about our show, they mean the world to us. So we'd like to start with our Fana Montana Spotlight and share a few of our favorite fan comments.
And I've got the first one.
You do.
It is from Carol Linick, who left a YouTube comment. When Hannah Montana was airing, my younger sister and I would always watch it on Saturday mornings on ABC Kids while having breakfast at our grandma's house. And now we get to watch this podcast on Saturday mornings and learn the behind-the-scenes stuff of our favorite show while having breakfast. Thank you for sharing the show with us. Your work has defined our childhoods and shaped our sense of humor. Keep up the fun episodes.
That is awesome.
I love this because it's sweet.
It's sweet.
We have one from Jessica S. Bailey, 1349, who left a comment on YouTube. My pigeon is on its way. Oh, thank God. Somebody's using pigeon.
The carrier pigeon. Oh,
but just in case it doesn't get there, I love this podcast so much. I was only one when the show started airing, and I grew up with three older brothers, and it was the only show that was just mine when Hannah was on. It was my TV time, and I would always sing and dance and laughed so hard. I loved the show and wish my brothers were like Jackson. Okay. Thank you guys so much for doing this, and I can't wait to watch more episodes. I, too, wish my brother was like Jackson.
I know. That's rough childhoods if you're wishing that the little Jackson was in your life.
Yeah. I wish my brother was like anyone else.
Yeah.
I love you, John.
And then our last comment for today is from Robin C. 6746. They left a YouTube comment as well. I watched Hannah Montana, the series, the first time with my kids. And now that my kids are grown, I'm watching them the same week that I'm watching the podcast. Roxy was always our favorite character. I'm sure that I still say Roxy like a puma every few months. And looking back, this is one of our favorite episodes from season one. And it starts out at the Tipton, which is iconic. Thanks for revisiting this one. I think it's very sweet and very appropriate for reasons that are going to become immediately apparent.
I hope so.
So if you are thinking that you want to be part of the Fana Montana spotlight, please leave a comment on our YouTube channel, on all of our socials, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. Call your mom, tell her how much you love the show, and have her write comments. Whatever works for you will work for us. And then finally, please make sure to check out our website, bestofbotharworlds.com, for videos, behind-the-scenes photos. Eventually, we'll get some cool giveaways, lots of merch, so check it out. You won't be disappointed.
Yay!
And Doug, let's just get started with the purpose of what we're doing today.
Strap in, kids. This is going to be good.
Hit it.
Let me introduce you to a personal favorite.
Yes.
Our guest today is half of the iconic comedy duo Frangela with Angela V. Shelton. She's a veteran of VH1's Best Week Ever, The Stephanie Miller Show. She's the co-host of numerous weekly podcasts, including The Final Word and The Final Word Idiot of the Week. She's been on CNN Showbiz Tonight, Headline News, Fox News, Red Eye. She's a regular contributor to NPR's Day to Day. She's been on numerous hit television shows. And if any of this is wrong, you guys will correct me. I'm sure you will. The internet is a evil, vicious place. She's been on numerous hit television shows, such as The Cleveland Show, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Joe Schmo, Just Roll With It, Drake and Josh, My Name is Earl, and on and on and on and on. But you know her as the legendary and lovable Roxy Roker on Hannah Montana. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend, Frances Collier.
Yay!
Having me!
Oh, Frances.
I'm so good to see you guys!
It's so good to see you too. This was really great. You and I ran into each other recently doing some silly online promos for some breakfast bagels. Not the place I was expecting to have a reunion, but it was totally worth it.
It was healing. It was fulfilling. It was wonderful.
It actually was wonderful. It was everything they could do to get us to go actually shoot the promos we were supposed to be doing. We were just off on the corner having
just
our little...
Just chit-chatting and chatting and chitting.
Those ads filled my... Instagram feed like every single day, so they were definitely
some reach.
Productive and it was so great to see you two together again. It was fantastic.
Yeah, one of the things that I actually loved about the reconnecting with you is we were chatting a little bit about your the things you had going on in your life outside of Hannah, mm-hmm. talking a little bit about podcasting and stand up, and so your history with comedy goes way before Hannah Montana. Would you please give us your origin story? When did you discover comedy? Where did you first start pursuing it? Where did that funny bone first start getting tickled?
Well, I think like most people who are comedians, who actually really start out being comedians, they start being comedians in their household.
Yeah.
And it is because, and it's one of two reasons. You're trying to maintain or uplift the situation, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's where I started. And everybody in my family is hilarious, okay? You don't step in my house and not be funny, okay? They're coming for you.
How big was the family? How many people are you talking?
Two older brothers, but my parents were hysterical. Okay? Mm-hmm. And my outside family, my cousins and everybody. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't know how to clown, you were going to get clowned. Okay? So that was the first thing. Then what I noticed is in going through school is I had the power to absolutely derail the entire class every day. Right? I could turn to the teacher and be like, you know what? As she's starting her lesson, I have a story to tell. Or, do you know what? I read this. And I would derail the entire, through seventh, eighth grade. When I got into high school, a teacher finally caught on. And he said, you know what? We need to direct your energy. Because I was going into an hour-long class and getting the entire class to talk for 40 minutes. Yeah. We were never learning anything. Yeah. He said, you know, have you ever heard of the Second City? I said, no. He said, you should go there. And I thought that I was going to go and learn how to be a stand-up like Eddie Murphy.
Okay.
And so I went the first day. I caught the bus from the west side of Chicago all the way up to the north side of Chicago. Went, took the class, came back, rode the bus. It was in January. Ooh. Rode the bus back an hour and a half to my home on the west side of Chicago, and I went in the house and I turned off the TV. You don't do that in a black house. And I stood in front of my parents and I said, I know what I'm going to do for the rest of my life.
Oh, shit. Ooh. How old were you?
15.
15 years old.
I was 15 years old. I was transformed and I couldn't get enough. I was there all the time. When you say you fall in love, I was having a love story with improvisation. Wow. Because this was the only thing that I had seen that had come into my life where I could be and determine who I was. Mm. I could be the first black female president. Mm-hmm. I could be an amoeba in space. I could be anything. I could be a truck driver. I could be a pirate.
Yeah.
I could be in any point in history. Infinity was open to me.
Wow.
Where else am I going to find that? That ain't going to happen in corporate America. Mm-mm. I don't get self-determination there. Mm-hmm. So I went there. I was there every day. So much so that the owner of Second City said, I cannot have a 15-year-old at the bar doing their homework. Because I had to maintain the A's, right?
Yeah.
I can't have that. They will shut us down.
Wow.
So she said, you're going to work here. So she put on a she says, this is what you do. You're going to go downstairs. You're going to work at the coat, right? You're going to take coats. Mm-hmm. We're going to pay you. And that started my life at Second City. I became a teacher. I created the outreach program because there weren't enough women or people of color or trans or gay or Latinos or Asian Americans or Mexican Americans doing this work. I took over the training centers in North America because the curriculum was important to me. I created the Chicago Improv Festival.
Oh my God.
I love improvisation.
Did you start teaching classes when you were like 18?
I started teaching
when
I was 18.
That's insanity to me. Like the idea that like you have that sort of a grasp on something as technically challenging as improv and you're able to like teach like adults that were pursuing
who were 40 years old.
Yeah.
And they were like, tell me more.
That's incredible.
Because I loved it and I wanted to know. And when I tell you, I stopped everybody I saw who came through those doors from Jim Belushi. And I would stop and I'd be like, hey, what can I do? And his advice to me at 16 was anything but this.
Yep.
So that's why I'm here.
Yeah.
My theater teacher said that to me.
Yeah.
In very first day of class in theater in college, he said, if there is anything in this world that you want to do besides this, you have to go do that. Because the only people that are going to make it are the people for whom nothing else is possible.
Right.
You must burn the ships.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. You must burn the ships. If there's a ship for you to go get back on, mm-hmm. You're going to get on that ship.
That's right.
Yeah, I'd say the same thing to everybody is that it doesn't matter if you're a comedian, it doesn't matter if you're an actor, if you're a writer, if you're a director. The one thing that all successful actors, writers, directors, comedians have in common is they didn't quit.
That's right.
Right, because there was no ship.
That's
there was no
that's
way
exactly
out.
That's exactly it.
Right, there was no way. So they all burn the ships. That's how you do it.
That's how you do it. You burn the ships.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You trudge forward.
How did you go about like creating the minority outreach program? Like, so you're young, you recognize there's a void in the curriculum. Like, who do you talk to? How do you have the voice or the...
I went to the owner of the company.
Yeah.
And I was 22 years old. And I said, I'm tired of talking to white guys in ties.
I also am tired of talking to white guys in ties. There's too many of us.
That was
I
the
never
term.
A tie.
That was the term.
Yeah. Yeah.
Around the building.
Right.
Yeah.
Was the second city was white guys and ties.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And to me, if you are talking about pulling in all of the universe, but it's only coming from one POV, you are doing a disservice to the work. So why aren't these people here in this building? Mm-hmm. Why aren't their voices represented on stage? That to me, and this is the 90s, right?
Yeah.
This is like 91, 92. It was ridiculous. Yeah. Like, there are all these, I'm in Chicago.
Of all places.
You know, I mean, we're not talking about Indiana, right? We're talking about Chicago. This is a major metropolitan city. And I'm watching these people in your audience. How come they're not on that stage?
There you go.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
And, but the fact that they listened was the amazing part.
Yeah, that's...
Like, the fact that they said yes.
Okay.
Like,
okay.
They gave me an office.
Okay.
I'm 22. It was a closet. Okay. Literally. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
It was literally a closet with a bathroom attached to it. Mm-hmm. And it was the bathroom for everybody on the third floor. So, when I would sit at my IBM, I had to listen to people go to the bathroom in a room that was this big, okay? And I was like, oh, I do not want to know the internal workings of all these people. Jesus, why are you doing me like this?
So, I don't know. I would say the 15-year-old who's doing homework at the bar and is like then going down to work in the coat check is the person that is so determined to be there and to succeed. Like handing that something as important as that to you, I would believe you.
And even though you're only 22, I mean, that's 7 years of being in the building and being a consistent presence and like
every day.
Every day.
Oh, my God.
Every day. So my mother would come and pick me up at like, because the set would be over at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
So she was working nights, and she would come from her job downtown, come to the north side, pick me up and my friend who also worked there, drop him at home because he lived in Oak Park, and then drive me home. We go home.
Wow. Did your whole family come out and like watch your shows?
Never.
Oh my God.
Never. I don't think my mother or father ever saw me perform.
A family that's so into like, even though it's just the survival mechanism, the busting of balls, but like the, where humor is such a big part of your guys' existence, they didn't come out?
I'm going to tell you why. I never invited them.
Oh.
I was so, you know, it took me a long time to find courage. Mm-hmm. It took me a long time to be like, I was okay for somebody else to see what I was doing mm-hmm. and to share it. And my father was a musician, right? My father was a savant, you know? And so it also felt like, and you know, like if you got somebody else who does it, you don't want to bother them. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. It does.
And my mom worked really hard. So I always felt like, I don't want to bother these people who have lots of things to do with what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
It makes sense.
You guys, we want to give a big thank you to today's sponsor, Vinted. This app is awesome. Do you guys remember the last time you cleaned out your closet?
Yeah, I do. It was like a few weeks ago and it was a total disaster.
It was awful, right?
Yeah, no mess.
I get scared trying to clean out my closet.
For me, it's sometime between never and what's a closet? Because all I have is a black hole in a wall where I stuff a bunch of clothes that don't fit anymore.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. And I would actually love to refresh my wardrobe with stuff that actually fits, but I have no space.
Right.
Do you have the same space issue?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely.
It's awful.
It's terrible.
Vinted actually is an app. It's a secondhand app that makes it really, really easy for everyday sellers to like get rid of all of their pre-loved fashion and make a couple of bucks on the side.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like that.
Wouldn't it be great if you could take back your space and make a couple of bucks on the side?
I would love that.
Yeah. My closet is actually filled with a bunch of old wardrobe pieces from different shows and movies that I've worked on.
Yeah.
And there's this really weird part of me that doesn't want to just like give it away.
Sure.
Like, I want to make sure that it finds a good home because I love these pieces so much.
Absolutely.
And I also like money. Right? So Vinted is like the obvious solution for that. It is an app that is free to download. And I'll be honest, sometimes I need a little incentive to get off my butt and actually get things done.
Yeah. Always.
So with no seller fees, it really encourages me to just like grab everything all at once, list it all, and you get to keep all the money.
That's awesome.
Like, how sick is that?
Yeah.
Listing items on Vinted is actually super quick. It's simple. And once an item sells, the best part, because I'm lazy, Vinted creates the prepaid shipping label for you. Right? That's the most tedious part of the whole thing.
Absolutely.
And they totally take care of it. So if you're ready to clean out your closet, make a little extra money, download the Vinted app for free and start your listings. With no seller fees, you keep every dollar that you earn. And for a limited time, you can enjoy free shipping in the U.S. on Vinted.
Ooh. Everything you've just said is motivating me to go home and clean out my closet.
So you're succeeding at Second City. Did you move out to California to do film and television at some point? When did you make that decision? How did that happen?
So let me tell you what happened to me. I was in the touring company. I was doing so many things mm-hmm. at one time. I was in the touring company at Second City. And then my boss, the owner, came to me and said, you're going to have to make a decision. You've got all these incredible things you're doing on the producing side. You know, you're our first black producer, you're this, you're da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and you're perform. And to him, the performance part, because he had come from SC TV mm-hmm. and all of that stuff, being a performer for him was a transitional thing, that actors sometimes get work, they sometimes don't, they sometimes make it. He's like, if I could tell you, one of the things he loved to sit down in the office and tell me about was all the people who he believed was going to make it who didn't.
Oh,
yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
And all the people who he believed wouldn't make it who did.
Interesting. Right.
And so for him, the smartest role for me was to be a producer.
Because it's the steady.
It's the steady, yeah. Right, blah, blah, blah. So I started doing an animated show called Hey Moni with Angela.
Okay.
And we were improvising all of the content, winning awards. It started out on Oxygen. It moved on to BET. And so at that time, the owner of Second City asked me to move to LA to open up LA Second City.
Okay.
Which I did. And then I was about 33 years old and I was like, what am I doing? I was like, bitch, you funny. People want to hire you. What you doing? Get away from this. Yeah. So then, and when Angela and I first started doing Hey Moni, I had on the, I remember the day I said it in the booth. I said, oh my God, I wish I could spend my life talking to you. Mm-hmm. I wish I could spend my life, us being partners and people paying us just to talk.
Yeah,
is,
look what
it, is that where you guys actually met? It wasn't like through Second City stuff.
No,
it
we was... met at Second City, okay. Because she's from Second City. Angela's the only person in history of Second City to have done all of the Second City theaters. Mm-hmm. She's the best sketch writer I've ever met on this earth.
Mm-hmm. Ringing endorsement.
I've never seen anybody write a scene faster, funnier, better quality than her. And I'm talking from Tina Fey on down.
Yeah.
Wow.
And Tina's brilliant.
Yeah.
I ain't trying to take nothing from Tina.
Right.
She's amazing. But what I've seen, mm-hmm. that woman, that's the message.
So how did you manifest that moment where you're like, I just want to talk to you for the rest of my life?
We just started doing it.
You just started doing it.
Burn the ships.
Okay.
Yeah. So did that take the form of a stand-up duo? Was it take the form of you were doing one or two women shows
okay.
that were more scripted? Or
so what we ended up doing, we had an agent at the time, and he represented a bunch of people on Best Week Ever.
Okay.
And we said, would you send our little tapes and stuff into Best Week Ever? And he said, I don't think you're ready.
Okay.
What a dick. And we said, okay. Then we had another woman that we had worked with and done another project with in Chicago, who's now a dear friend of mine. She said, I'm stepping in for a friend of mine on Best Week Ever. Like a couple weeks later.
Yeah. Oh my God.
She said, can I get some of y'all tape to take in? And turn, because you should be on this. She's like, I'm in this room every day with these people.
Yeah.
You guys would be great at this. We send the tape. They bring us on. We become regulars.
Mm-hmm. I will say, not to interrupt your story, but when you came on Hannah Montana, I was low-key geeking out because I loved Best Week Ever on VH1. It was like one of those pleasures that I loved because burning everything that happened during the week was...
Guilty pleasures. That was very much that early 2000 show. Yeah, you know what I mean? And what we loved it is because what we didn't want to do was talk about people, and we wanted to be fans of people. And that was our POV, was never as much as, you know, we don't want to talk about the da-da-da-da-da-da and this, what's going on with her. Let's talk about what we enjoy about what's happening, you know? Right. And so that's what we really loved that. And then we did like a two-woman show and got like a deal, like a sitcom deal from like... I believe it was like Fox and ABC were fighting over us. Mm-hmm. We ended up going with Fox. So we did a pilot through them. And so, you know, it took forms of stand-up. We toured like for like 7 years, all the colleges through NACA, and then podcasts. And then, you know, we were getting, what is it? He's Just Not That Into You.
Right.
We improvised that audition together. So we were doing a lot of little different things and TV appearances and then news appearances. And then, so, you know, we're in all those worlds. So that's...
When you were doing just as a inside baseball, always curious, like that, the Best Week Ever, for shows like that, did you guys write all of your own stuff? Did they give you... out? Like, how do they generate the content for that?
So you get a packet, and it would have, like, a link, of course, to whatever they're going to show. And then they would give you a couple of angles to come from or questions. And then you would go in and in front of the camera. So some people wrote their stuff. Mm-hmm. We never did. We just improvised it, and they just took what they lifted, what they liked. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was always curious. Yeah. How I didn't know, because I'm sure that some people, like, if they just want the face, the celebrity responding versus like a comedian, like maybe they write them jokes and they just barf.
I'm sure they do, and yeah. I don't know what other people's experiences are.
But you guys improving makes sense.
But that
sense
was ours.
Me.
Yeah. Right.
I remember when Angela came and visited on set of Hannah Montana, and I have never seen a more loving, so the look on her face when she was watching you perform was, there was so much pride and joy, and I just loved watching Angela, watching you on set, and she was so obviously so goddamn funny, but it was just like,
you know Angela's story, right, with Hannah Montana?
No.
Okay, so.
Oh, let's get there. Okay, let's get there.
Strap in.
So Angela was, she actually, before me, was cast on Hannah to be a reporter in the pilot.
Oh.
And so she comes in, she gets the part, she's all excited, she's all, you know, walking around and ready and da-da-da-da, and to go to lunch, and she's like ready to go downstairs and work, and here comes somebody running down the hall, like, you don't need to come to the set, they cut your part, go home.
Yeah.
We talked with Steve Peterman about that, because that was the scene where the Fermi's place caught on fire, right. And there was supposed to be this reporter, and Emily or Lily was going to out Hannah Montana on camera, and then it was just like we don't need this. I had no, oh my god,
no idea she was the reporter.
Yeah. She was the reporter.
Yeah, oh, God.
And she tells it with such glee. She's like, I'm just ready. I'm about to go get my costume on.
Oh, my God.
That is crazy. The pilot changed a ton that week. Even,
well, of course.
We've talked about it. My part was completely like rewritten the day before we started shooting. It was all crazy.
So do you remember how you got, you went through the regular audition process.
I can tell you, I can remember it.
Yeah.
Hit me. Okay.
I'm full of pregnant, right? I'm 6 months pregnant, and it's Carol, can I say the name?
Goldwater. Yeah, Carol.
Who was no longer with us.
Right.
I know.
God bless her. And her partner.
Howard.
Who's amazing.
Yeah.
And I just remember they were very kind and very sweet in this little tiny room, right? Yeah. And they were like, well, just, you know, will you read with us? And I read it and da-da-da-da-da. And they were like, that's very good. And they laughed, you know.
Yeah.
And but I can just still see them both in that room, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I got it. I was like, oh, look at this.
Yeah.
And I thought, I was like, oh, I'll just do it once or whatever. This bit. And then they had me back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the problem with being too funny.
Yeah. What was Angela's reaction to you, your role? Did she think the part was funny? Was she like?
Oh, she's really happy for me, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, and I think that ultimately, at the end of the day, she's angrier than I am about whether or not I worked enough on that show.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm angry about that. We'll talk about that in a little bit.
I'm angry about it, but whatever.
So what was your first impression of the show? Like as far as the tone on the set, the writing.
It was an early episode, remember?
Can we be honest?
Your general.
We expect nothing else. And our audience wants you to be honest, too.
First of all, Miley was adorable.
Yeah.
She was 14 years old. And the thing is that you don't realize how young that is until much later.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when your kid is 13, 14, you go, oh my God, that's how old Miley was.
Right.
Yeah, you're like, oh God.
She's a baby.
Right.
She was a baby.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I really enjoyed, what I like my first like thoughts is like I remember her trying to learn her lines. Mm-hmm. I remember her wanting to do good. Mm-hmm. I remember everybody being really excited and fun on the set. I remember Emily's dad.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Eugene.
Eugene, yeah. Who was so lovely, mm-hmm, and kind and professional. Knowing but hawkish,
yeah,
behind his eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah,
yeah.
That man was a hawk.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he had a bead on everything that was going on.
Every single thing.
Yep. Yep.
He knew. That's. I was like, oh, if I got a question, I'm gonna ask him.
Yeah.
He knows. Mm-hmm. I remember like the first. I remember being on the berm.
Yep. On the beach set.
Mm-hmm. And I'm 6 months pregnant. And they asked me to throw a life-sized dummy over.
God. Oh, yeah. Was it a Mitchell dummy?
It was for chucking Mitchell.
Yeah.
And nobody knew I was pregnant.
Well, I think we exchanged...
We did.
...stories about being pregnant. Yeah. But I remember... Yeah. Both of us, I remember you asking me to not say anything about you being pregnant because you didn't want anybody to limit your comedic, like anything physical. You were like,
I really, you know, and on the other side of that, going on outside, my mom had stage 4 cancer. Oh. She was home in our house. We were basically doing hospice for my mother while I was pregnant. I get this do show and, you know, and doing all of these things.
Oh my God.
So I'm just like, and I was so grateful. I was so grateful to get that part because it allowed me to throw all the energy that was in me from being pregnant, from taking care of my mother into that role.
That is wild.
They are asking you to throw a dummy over the berm.
And I do it.
And you did it.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you were great.
And I do it. And it was fun. It was fun.
Yeah.
That's incredible. I think that's kind of the magic thing about what we do is that you would never know that you had all of that stuff going on in your life. Mm-hmm. It was just like getting a chance to lose yourself in the joy of doing the thing for a moment.
Because that's what we're here for. That's what we the us who like to do this thing.
Yes.
This is what we do. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, whether or not, whatever's going on, we are able to, believe it or not, a lot of the time, not all the time, but a lot of the time, take that stuff, put it right here.
Yeah.
And then focus.
That's right.
We focus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, because I was pregnant at the time, I didn't want anybody to feel like my pregnancy was somehow going to inhibit what I was able to do as a really hard worker on that show. So I was like, this is not a disability. Right. My pregnancy is not a disability.
She can't do her job because she's full of pregnant. she's full of pregnant. Look at her. Full of pregnant. Follow that pregnant. Look at that.
There was one thing that encumbered, and that's us watching the quad split from the writer's room, because we would make jokes all the time, and I think it was your second pregnancy, where she would turn to give a note, and we were in the writer's room watching the quad split, and it would just block the camera. Just the belly, and we'd be like, Shannon!
But, you know, like, I did not tell the producers that I was pregnant the first time until I was literally buttoning my pants with... Yeah. A rubber band.
You did the rubber band.
And but also I was really afraid that somebody was going to say to me, you can't do this anymore because you're
pregnant. It's a reality as a woman.
Yeah, that's correct.
It's a reality as a person who works. And you know, that's why I'm just so glad, like, now we have maternity leave for everybody.
Yeah.
As it should be.
Amen. Mm-hmm.
Yep. As it should be. Yeah. It's not just something that a woman and the baby is going, the whole family. family's going through it.
Yeah. Got it.
You have baby bonding time now.
Yeah, of course you should have that.
Yeah. Well, we called it hiatus.
I know. I worked up until our last episode and then went to the wrap party a week later, which was my due date. So, like, I was there on my due because, like, what the hell else was I going to do? Yeah. Sit on my couch? Like, no. Anyway, but I digress.
Yeah. No, I mean, was there a moment or any specific memory or episode or whatever that, like, leaps out to you as, like, the just, I don't know, just for the whole experience, is there one thing that, like,
I got one.
Is the one?
The episode where I got to go to school with Hannah.
Oh my. I have a story about that one, too.
That is, I believe... That is my personal... other people have told me their favorite.
Yeah.
That's my personal favorite one. Because I just love the fact that someone wrote the fact that I'm going to walk in and I am going to tear this down. You think that you're going to go into the school and have your own... Watch me. And they gave me a skateboard, too.
Okay, I got the story about the skateboard. I've been waiting to tell this.
Okay.
This is one of my favorite Francis Roxy moments. And I don't know how much you remember about this. Do you remember... Okay, so the idea is Miley says don't. But you say, screw it, I'm coming in undercover as a kid.
Yeah.
And you come in with the skateboard and the ponytails and all that. And your first line, as we constructed it, was going to be very kid-like so that you would be embarrassing to Miley.
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember what it was? It wasn't that way when it was on air, but you remember the original first line?
I don't.
The original first line was, where do I park my deck?
Oh, yes, yeah. Yes.
And... Okay, and it became, where do I park my board? Because you came in just full of it, and you went, where do I park my deck? And I giggled, because all I heard was, where do I park my deck? And I made the huge mistake, I'm sitting behind the monitors, and I make the huge mistake of turning to Andrew and saying... Did you say dick? And the standards lady was there.
Oh, no.
So now all she heard was dick. So I don't know if you remember, but we made you do that entrance 8 times. We kept saying, enunciate the word dick.
Yeah.
I do remember that.
And you did. And I remember it was clear as day that you said dick. But then we were like, you know what? Once for insurance, let's get bored just in case.
Yeah.
and then, of course, in editing, they chose board. Well, they pulled the plug on us because they said, no, it doesn't sound anything like it. It was just my 12-year-old boy listening. But it was I thought it was the funniest thing. I could not stop laughing when you said it every time. And the more you did it, the more I thought it was funny, the more I laughed, the worse it got.
That's because everybody knew exactly what you were thinking. And if Doug was thinking it, somebody else is going to think it.
But here's the funny thing. Okay, so you have so many ideas. Iconic lines.
Yes.
So many things I repeat daily. People, our audience repeats. They write in, oh my God, Roxy like a puma. They write in all this stuff.
Yes.
One of the ones I repeat is only for me. I repeat, where do I park my deck? All the time. My deck.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
I mean, the catchphrases, we talk about it a lot. You probably have more catchphrases than any other character.
Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And for only being in 2 seasons, that's like a shocking accomplishment.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite catchphrase from Roxy? Like one that...
You know, everybody who comes up to me, they demand it.
Roxy like a puma.
They want a videotape. Yeah. They want a picture.
Yeah.
Okay. And they serious about it.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, this is how I knew that we gotta be coming up on 20 years. People were coming up in bars.
Yeah.
And the first time it happened, like maybe a decade ago, when young women, I was like, you shouldn't be able to ask me to say Roxy like a book. You shouldn't be able to be in here.
This should be a safe space for me.
Right. But I did, you know, we were doing College Towns, and that was the thing I realized when we were doing NACA and doing stand-up. I was like, we get a lot of gigs. Yeah. Angela was like, yeah, we get a lot of gigs. We're on the road a lot, you know?
Yeah.
And then one day I put two and two together. I was like, oh, they know me from Hannah Montana.
Yeah.
They're booking us from Hannah Montana. Okay. So when we went to college towns and would go out after the shows, people would be in bars being like, Roxy like a boom. Roxy like a boom.
Oh, but I have so many.
Doug's other favorite line would be perfect in a bar because you love the...
Roxy like the big drink, but the big drink don't like Roxy.
He's
a 57-year-old Jewish man. That is true. Every time I go to the movies, I'm like... But there are so many of them, like, throughout the years. And you know what? We write lines that we don't think they're going to be like that.
Yeah. Right.
It's you doing them that makes them that
but did
way,
you,
right?
Like
so it's you kind of create that
yeah.
world. That,
when you read the script, yeah. did you go, oh, this is catchphrase, or like I'm gonna really like bend this one like Beckham, and it's good, like they're gonna have to bring it just naturally.
That's where the improv comes in, right?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
you have to you feel it in the moment.
Yeah,
and then that's the thing yeah. that gets
we're gonna play.
The big laugh.
Yeah,
and then you're like, okay.
Had you done Disney stuff before, Hannah? Like, was Hannah the thing that opened the door to other Disney or kid family-friendly stuff? Or was it the other way around?
So, you know Yvette Brown, who had been on Sweet
yeah.
Life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
yeah.
You know, I did, not Sweet Life, Drake and Josh.
Yeah.
Sorry, the other two boys that are
right,
obnoxious,
right?
Right.
Yeah.
Hey. They brought me in to play Helen for one episode. I believe she was having a contract. Dispute. And I realized that in retrospect that they had used me against another black woman.
Oh.
And that, I mean, it's those moments, you know, mm-hmm. where you go, yeah. what mm-hmm. happened here? Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, you want to play around with things. You want to play things. It needs to sound funny. It needs to feel funny. Mm-hmm. It needs to feel fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
You know? And here's the thing. I don't know if I went back and did this all over again. I don't know if I would play it the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a different time. It's a different feeling. But that show was broad.
Hannah
was.
Oh, yeah, it was very broad.
It was very, very broad. And in that way, I still feel okay about how that got played.
Yeah.
But it was clownish.
Mm-hmm. Well, sort of leads to you. I think you should.
I have a question about that
yeah.
whole thing.
Yeah.
And I want to ask you specifically because of your knowledge of comedy and you're an incredibly smart person and you know this world. We, in comedy, there you can derive humor from character.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can cross that line and derive it from stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried real hard to stay on the correct side of that line.
I believe you
right?
did, yeah.
But there were times, and I flagged them as we watched these episodes, I go, ooh, we made a mistake there. Like with Fermin in the pilot, I felt we leaned on the stereotype of gay man and not the persnicketiness of that particular character.
Right.
There's a difference. And I felt we would cross the line with him.
Yeah.
Do you feel like, because something you did great,
mm-hmm.
and we talk about this a lot, is Hannah was successful because we had actors who knew how to make big real.
Yeah.
And sometimes you make big fake and it's not real and it doesn't work. You made the big real. But did you feel there were any times with Roxy's character that we pushed up against that line that you look back on it now and go, I wouldn't have done that?
No, I never felt like that in the moment.
Right.
And I don't feel like that now. But what I can say is, like, watching a whole bunch of different shows, retrospectives,
mm-hmm.
like, for example, America's Next Top Model.
Mm-hmm.
And then watching people go, well, you know, if I had it again, to do it again. And I've thought about that. You
mm-hmm.
know what I mean?
Right.
And I, you know... She was broad and she is big, but there is nothing in that performance where I felt like, oh, I traded my morality or
right.
my blackness
right.
mm-hmm.
or my womanness
mm-hmm.
right.
for the sake of the line or the sake of recording this. I never felt in any way like, I just felt that that's who Roxy was.
Yeah.
And not so much, I'm going to play this kind of big black character.
Yeah.
There are a couple of moments in the show that I loved that showed the multifaceted nature of Roxy. One was when we did the crossover with Corey in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was the moment with Miley that had to be played so real, which was her asking Roxy to come back mm-hmm. and be her bodyguard again. Because, and it was like, it felt like everything in that moment just kind of was focused on this genuine relationship between the two of them.
Yeah.
And there was, and that was a facet of Roxy that was so beautifully played by you that, because it just, it showed the depth of the relationship that you two had. And then the second one was the scene, was the episode with Cheryl Lee Ralph.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And there, her, like, who would have ever thought that Roxy was so insecure? Right. You know what I mean? Like, making Robbie Ray her husband mm-hmm. and putting out all those hilarious pictures.
Right.
But, like, there was such an insecurity about wanting to impress Cheryl Lee Ralph. And yeah. and it was just, it was so great. It was so mature. Well, it was
we had this amazing trust for you as an actor. Yeah. Mm. So, I mean, like that, crossing that line or staying on the right side of that line or being able to play these moments, we sort of gave up that. We were like, well, Francis will let us know. Francis will do, you know, Francis will be honest with us, right? And we'll play those parts real and we'll make big real and funny. And
yeah.
We just trusted, after a while, we just trusted you. And we just said, she'll do it.
I'm doing a scene with Shirley Ralph.
Yeah.
I know.
Okay. Angela had auditioned for that part, my mm-hmm. partner.
Yeah.
And she was like, I was like, I'm sorry, you're not going to get it. I said, they're talking to Angela Bassett for it. And she went, no, I'm okay. If I lose out to Shirley Ralph or Angela Bassett, I'm okay with that, you know? Because that's how big the show was.
At the time.
Oh,
and that is my second favorite. That brings us, because that episode had my second favorite Roxy moment. I don't know if you remember this either. I know you remember this.
Hit me.
It is the moment, we were shooting the scene in front of the audience, right? You come down the stairs, and there was a line flop of something, and you hit her with, we just kept rolling. Do you remember what you hit her with?
Do you remember the lead up? Do you remember?
I don't remember. The lead up was something like, you're not my mom. And then you storm upstairs,
the
right?
The lead up was, I think, Roxy was trying to discipline Jackson.
Yes.
Oh, that's the episode where we're doing the yoga, right?
No.
This is the Cheryl Lee Ralph episode. Okay.
Yeah, it is, because you are pretending to be his mom.
Got you.
And you're sending him upstairs to clean his room or whatever you're doing.
We flubbed a thing, basically, and then I was like, you're not my mom. My mom's dead.
Oh, yes! I remember that. And I fell out.
And we lost
it a lot on that set.
Yeah, we lost it. I mean, literally, we were behind the monitors just falling out of chairs.
That is
it
the was, magic of the live audience.
Yeah.
Like the fact that we were blessed on Hannah to be able to do a live audience on Fridays more often than not, you know, it harkens back to the Second City stuff. You need that like connection. And I leaned on the dead mom jokes as much as I could. Because a live audience, so they're there with their families and they're like, this is going to be fun. And then I'm just hit them with a dead mom joke. And it made me so happy.
It was. I have to say, I knew that you would be back mm-hmm. at the end of your first episode, which was It's a Mannequin's World.
Yes.
With the sweater bit, the minute that they cut to you enjoying the sweater.
Oh, the kitty sweater.
The kitty and dog sweater with jingle bells. And Roxy, like, on the end of the couch, loving it so much with everybody else's embarrassed looks. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is a regular. Aww. This is going to be a regular thing.
So why wasn't it a regular all the way?
Yeah, so this is the other like thing that like, you know, if you want to punt, you can totally punt. But I find it shocking that you were only in the first two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
I find it very upsetting, actually. It's one of the things that like I think is probably one of the biggest missteps in the course of the whole show.
Agreed.
I don't know like what happened there. Do you know?
I was basically told like what happened was that next season, the third season, it was, I mean, at first it was popular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it was dads are on radio stations running in heels trying to get tickets to this sold out concert that every child needs to be a part of. And if I am not a part of Hannah Montana and you're not getting me that, then the world ain't right. Okay? That we went from there to there.
Yeah. Right.
So by the third season, I was kept being told, we wrote you in the script, right? Mm-hmm. You know, block out this week to come and tape. Okay, great. Block that week out. Nope, we're not using you. We're moving on, doing something else. Okay, great. Do this week, you know.
Yeah.
Block it out. And mind you, I don't get paid for that.
Right.
Okay? So they kind of put a pin in you, as they like to say.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not, we've booked you, but we got a pin for that time. That happened for about a year and a half.
Yeah. Oh my God.
With not nary a show taped or anything. And I was blowing other things off.
Yeah.
I was saying no to other things, other work. And to the point where my manager came, and this was like by the 10th time. My manager was like, they want to book you for Hannah. And I was like, okay, whatever. It's not going to happen, but whatever.
Right.
And so then it got to the point where we just never heard from them ever again. And what I was told was, why would we book her when we can have Larry David?
Sure.
Why would we use her when we have access to all these other people? That was the answer I got.
It was frustrating for us as well. The story from our side of it was, in the writer's room, we were madly in love with you, right? You made everything we wrote turn to gold. So we kept trying to put you in.
That's what I heard.
And what would end up happening, would we would get back, we can't afford to do this show.
That's what I heard.
And then it was, how do we tell this story with the amount of money that we have?
Right.
And then it was, well, we lose this character. And we as many times as, you know, you were Charlie Brown with the football and you were told, we're going to leave the football. And then Lucy pulled the football. We had the same thing, which was, we wrote something we thought was brilliant and we know you're going to nail it. And then we were told we couldn't do it and we had to go. And over and over and over again, we just got more and more frustrated to the point where it was like, you know,
I was told that. Yeah. I was told we can't, the number one TV show.
Okay.
I'm gonna look here. The number one TV show on television couldn't afford to put $800 into their budget. And that is the thing that people need to understand about television.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because I was like, oh, okay. But and what I heard was, we're going to focus this money. We get better bang for our buck with this $800 or whatever this honorarium is for this person coming on.
Yeah.
And so for me, that was the end of what? Hannah Montana what? Mm-hmm. It's over.
We were talking about this a little bit before we started recording today, but like this silly perception that if somebody's seen you on television once, they assume that you are like a gajillionaire and you're living in the, you know, in luxury and it's just, your work begets work. And it is just, it is not.
That's a misnomer.
It's a misnomer. Yeah. And there's so many like incredibly talented like guest stars or reoccurring, you know, that you guys are, you're still working regular jobs and you've got seven different side hustles and the times that we sort of shortchange you by not finding that $800 to have you come in and hang half an episode on your talents, like,
it was frustrating. It was so frustrating. Yeah. And here's, not to get into the weeds a little bit, but because our show was a made-for-cable and it was a mid-budget show, it wasn't a big made-for-cable show, there were union rules and laws, and our budget had to be exactly a certain every week. Mm-hmm. And if we went like a penny over.
I was told
over,
that, yeah.
Yeah, it would trigger all these escalators and all of the.
So just, one penny over meant like hundreds of thousands of more dollars spent. So they wouldn't let us go over. And the other thing is, by the third season of a show, all of these people who work
there are getting their little union bumps, or 2 or 5% bumps every year. So the longer it goes, the more people you have to fire in order to make the show fit within that budget. It's crazy. Yeah, the accounting is crazy. And so most people just think the more money you make, the bigger your show can be.
Mm-hmm.
It's not true.
Or the bigger your show, the more money you make.
Yeah, no, it's not true. The more money that the show makes, the more money that they make.
I always find it really, really frustrating because genuinely, we've talked about it, you know, the couple of episodes that we've gotten through so far this season that you're in, like it is when you have a guest star that comes in and you can literally hang half of the story on their shoulders.
Yeah.
It's not even like you need Miley to carry a story or you need me to carry the B story. Like oftentimes we would hang an entire story, like you're watching me and Miley as Billy Ray goes off and tries to start his music career again. You have somebody that's that solid, that funny, that talented, and then you can't figure out how to, like, have them there all the time is the most frustrating thing. My biggest, like, regrets or frustrations with the whole run of the show was the fact that we did not have you on more than we did.
But in any kind of spinoff moving forward,
that's right.
It'll be...
I know, but, and I will say this, it's a real testament to you, Francis, and your talent and what an impact you had on the show that all these years later that you could be in a bar.
It's a blessing.
And somebody is...
Are you kidding me?
I know. So that's how much the regret...
That's why I can't be mad. Yeah.
I know, but it deepens the regret that much more.
That's a regret for you.
From our side.
From your POV. Understand. Yeah. I don't have any regret. Here's the thing. What happened, happened.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's just the truth of it.
Yeah.
We could all sit here around 20 years later and be like, well, that should have happened. Yeah. Well, it could have happened, but it didn't happen.
Right. Truth.
This is the truth of it. The truth of it was I worked 2 years on that show and that was it.
Yeah.
And you made a huge impact in that 2 years.
Yeah. And it was, and people loved me.
Oh, yeah.
And to me, more importantly.
Not love. Still love. Still love.
Yeah. It's, to me, what's important is when I see people who I gave some pleasure to.
Yeah.
I provided some joy. Because when I went into that room when I was 15 and told my parents what I wanted to be, that's what I wanted to be. Mm. I wanted to give that.
Yeah.
So I did that.
Yeah. And here we are, I mean, 20 years later.
Yeah.
The thing that is so special to me about the show is we're 20 years later, and I see you, and I love you, and am as excited to see you today as I was every time you would show up on set. And not every show is like that.
No.
To be like, oh, my God, you were this magical part of this magical thing.
I feel good about you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I feel good about you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's hard to say in television.
Oh, yeah.
Because we know what happens when these cameras go off.
We
know who's in that writer's room. Mm-hmm. We know those producers. We know those actors who make our lives a living hell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just want to feed my family.
Yeah.
Right.
Right?
Right.
But we're all nice people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, but we know we've experienced it.
Yeah.
And we know what a blessing is on a set when it's calm and funny and fun and interesting. And it's a joy and a place to go to. We know to appreciate that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mitchell Musso, when he was on the pod recently, was talking about when it's over and not recognize, like, you can't recognize in the moment just what you have.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Until it's over. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait, I don't get to go back there next week? Or I don't get to... And that sense of... there. I mean, you feel a lot of things. And but also, in retrospect, just recognizing what a gift.
Yeah.
Well, that's why this is so special.
I agree.
I'm so happy to be doing this.
Me too. Yeah. My husband was like, really? I was like, really?
But being able to reconnect like this is just, it just reignites all of that, like, joy.
Was he like, who would let those assholes do a podcast?
Well, yeah, he was. When we did that piece together, I came home so enthused, feeling so good. It was like a breath of fresh air blew through something I didn't know was funky in the past.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It cleansed and cleaned it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that is what the work you're doing in this room is. You know, you're celebrating.
Yeah.
And you're taking an honest look. And here's the thing. This is why I brought up America's Next Top Model in retrospect. Because we're all different people than we were 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we would do different things differently now. Mm-hmm. Based on the lives we've lived, based on, you know, the things we've learned collectively.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a society, we do things differently.
Oh, yeah.
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 Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. It's just like all we could do at that time is be who we were.
Right.
And hopefully we were being good people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think if we weren't, we wouldn't be sitting here right now.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. As we get here towards the end and we're starting to land this plane, can we plug all of your pluggables? Can we share with the people like what you're up to, the things you're excited about, what's coming up? Please open forum to share the exciting things going on.
First of all, I'm gonna talk to you directly.
Okay.
First of all, since you're on YouTube, go over to Frangela's Idiot of the Week. Hit subscribe. We also have podcasts, Idiot of the Week. The final word, something ain't right. That's what we talk about, stuff that ain't right. I have a sexy liberal stand-up show coming up. Go to sexyliberal.com, pick up tickets, October 24th. If you like politics, and you know what kind of politics I'm talking about.
Oh boy! I will be doing all of those things.
Yes, so will I. I can't wait to come see your show in October.
At the Saban amazing. Here in LA.
Perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Perfect.
We should come en masse.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just get a big old group and just.
We
get
should.
Flies
we're
gonna
go. Down. I got nothing in October.
Gosh, I feel like I could just talk to you. Forever. I am so glad that you came.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for doing this.
Yeah. This has been a blessing for us. We had our 20th anniversary,
mm-hmm.
and it was a glorious celebration of Miley and all things Miley. This was like our chance to sort of expand the celebration to
mm-hmm.
the whole
experience. Give us the reunion we felt we needed.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
And I agreed. It's nice to you get to wash the stink off of a little bit of it.
Yeah.
You get to celebrate the parts of it that worked, and we get to reconnect with some of our all time favorite people.
Absolutely.
Oh my god.
So I feel really just blessed that you said yes to this.
Thank you, Francis.
Jason, you ask her. I don't want to ask her. She'll say no to me.
And now just based off of our little bagel fiasco, I feel like.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's
going to
work out. Was any last minute, anything you guys want to?
I just love you and appreciate you.
Yeah.
And
as do I.
Yeah.
Thank you for your work.
Thank you for making us look good every time you stepped out there. It was like,
every
that was all
time.
Us, guys. We wrote that. That was
yeah.
all us.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for helping elevate the performances in those episodes up to your level, because when the tide comes up, everybody comes up, and you were the tide.
We needed you as far as getting all the kids up to speed on the show. I think having consistent, rock solid, funny, professional people like you and myself.
Do you mean?
It really helped. I think get the.
Yeah.
I think we got there sooner than we would have otherwise.
Do you mean rock solid or Roxy solid?
Roxy solid.
See what I did there?
I see what you did.
All right, let's
all
land
right,
this plane.
Here we go.
Thank you all so much for hanging out with us today. This has been an absolute joy. If you want, you know, subscribe to our YouTube channel, Best of Both Our Worlds. Helps us a ton if you engage with the algorithm, baby. Leave comments, share with your friends, hit the little bell, do all the things. We want to keep doing a million of these, like I always say, and that really helps us out. Make sure that you follow us on Instagram at Best of Both Our Worlds Podcast, on TikTok at Best of Both Our Worlds, and you know what to do on X. Don't do it.
Don't do on X.
This has been... check out the website as well, bestofbotharworlds.com, for all of the cool stuff, the merch, the videos, you got a little Babao hoodie.
There's a hat.
They're... They're doing God's work with the merch. This has been Best of Both Our Worlds, the official unofficial Hannah Montana podcast, created and hosted by Jason Earls, Douglas Dangerously Blind, and Shannon Flynn, executive producer Renee Colvert, produced by Jeff Murphy, filmed, edited, and finished at Quest Pacifica, with special thanks to Katie Boyum and Lee Anthony Smith. Original music by Joe Serafini, social media strategy by Shelby Stahl and Beloved Social. And with that...
Good day, Daddy. I said good day. Whoa!
The best one ever.
Yeah. Let an improv professional do it.
Thanks for hanging out, guys.
Thank you. Oh, thank Francis. Thank you.
Thank you.